This is Judy, a community environmental activist in 1995. And here she is now, many years older, with a smile on her face in the year 2012. But behind this happy expression, Judy is hiding a lot of pain.
I can see that I have changed physically, and I'm not as healthy as I was in 1995. Just the way I feel. Forgetting things, or not understanding somebody when they say something to me. It just sounds like gibberish, and then after I have to say what? And they have to say it again, then I can understand it sometimes. So to me, it's like a neurological thing.
And here is Robert, Judy's father, only a few years ago. He too, like his daughter, is now in pain.
Heart attacks.
Diabetes.
Brain cancer,
stomach cancer.
I'm
one of the victims.
A victim, that's how he describes himself. A victim of something that happened to him and his community almost 50 years ago. Judy and Robert are from Grassy Narrows, an Aboriginal community in Canada that, as this CBC journalist suggests, has been a destination for many journalists in the past few decades. The community lives near the English Wabigan River system in North Ontario, a place that has been a food resource for Aboriginal communities in Canada for years. Grassy Narrows has now inherited the resource, though it's not worth much anymore. In 1962, Dryden Chemicals, a paper mill located in Dryden in northwestern Ontario, began dumping mercury in the English Wabigan River system. In the space of almost 10 years, Dryden pumped 10 metric tons of mercury into the river system. Mercury that poisoned the fish and whoever ate those fish. In the year 1970, the Ontario government issued a warning against eating fish from the Wabigan River system, and later on claimed the water had been purified, until the claim was called into question by Judy and her community.
In 1997, a Health Canada official came to the clinic in Grassy, and he said, "I'm from Health Canada, and I'm here just to tell you that there's no more mercury in the water. Everything's fine." And then this nurse that was there at the time, she said, if she hadn't said this, it never would have alarmed me. I would have just kept on with life. But she says, "Well, how come in your fishing guides, Ontario fishing guides," she had one in front of her, "it says that they can only eat so much fish off this river system?" And he started stuttering, kind of like he didn't know how to answer her. And he said, "Well, there is no more mercury in the waters." But she kept on him. And when she did that, it kind of woke up a piece of me to say, "Yeah, why is that?"
A question that made Judy open her eyes to a crisis that had for so long overtaken her land. A question that now brings Judy and her community thousands of kilometers to Toronto and Ottawa to protest, raise awareness, and demand justice.
When the news first hit the mercury problem, a reporter said, "It's hard to fight something that you can't see, you can't feel, you can't taste after 50 years. Contrary to that popular belief, we can see it, We can taste it. We can feel it. I myself cannot work anymore. I stand here probably the last time. You know, I'm not the man that I used to be.
Steve is a former Grassy Narrows chief. He can barely walk now because of the toxic impact the mercury has had on him. When organic mercury enters the natural environment, it turns into organic mercury known as methyl mercury. This very toxic compound that enters the food web via dietary exposures through insects, small fish, and then larger fish, a process that exponentially adds to the concentration of methyl mercury in fish depending on age, size, and level it occupies in the food web. By 1970, fish caught in the English Wabigan River system showed mercury levels 40 times more than had been declared safe, a reality that the Canadian medical and scientific community ignored for so long until Dr. Hirada, along with his teammates such as Mr. Masanori, all neurologists from Japan, came to Canada invited by the people.
À Grassy Narrows, il y avait des habitants qui avaient des maladies. Et il n'y avait pas de spécialiste à ce moment-là au Canada. Donc, eux, ils cherchaient des médecins et ils ont trouvé, nous, les Japonais. Et c'est pour ça que nous sommes venus pour voir ce qui s'est passé à ce moment-là.
Dr. Harada and his team's findings showed strong similarities to Japan's Minamata disease. This very devastating sickness emerged in Japan when a local factory dumped mercury into Minamata Bay and many locals and animals were poisoned. It was then that the symptoms of methyl mercury poisoning first started to appear.
1975, et on a découvert qu'il y a des cas similaire de maladie Minamata, Grassy Narrows. Et l'année suivante, 76, trois medical doctors, médecins, sont venus pour voir de près. Et on a découvert justement la maladie Minamata était là.
The symptoms of Minamata disease include sensory disturbances, incoordination, concentric constriction, impaired hearing, which all result from the way methyl mercury affects the immune system, genetic and enzyme, and the nervous system. Methyl mercury is particularly damaging to developing embryos, something that can later cause seizures in young children.
I can't say, like so many percentage in grasses like this or whatever, but I could say that I've seen a higher incidence of seizures amongst infants than when I first went home in 1995. And that's maybe because I'm at home more and I can see people like telling me my child had a seizure last night, or I'd take my kid to the hospital because my child had a seizure.
Whether mercury poisoning has caused death in Grassy Narrows is still unknown. But for Judy, the death rate in her community and Dr. Harada's findings cannot be unrelated.
I think he said that the people he first tested, there's only a little bit of people left that he had tested in 1975. And he only had a handful of people left that were still alive that had mercury poisoning in 75. So to me, that's an indicator that the stuff they could have died of could have been related to mercury.
But the mercury did not only devastate people's health, it also destroyed their way of life.
In our past, we would have lived off the land, we use what is needed, and we would have been comfortable and been able to pass down our culture generation to generation, live our lives in a dignified manner. And because of the industrialization and the raping of the land, the clear cutting, the polluting of the water, all the rest of it that goes along with it, the First Nations people have not been allowed to continue on with their traditional way of life. Once the water was affected, the people who are on that land are drinking the water. They're fishing, they're living off the fish that are coming out of the water. The wildlife that surrounds the area is obviously drinking the water as well. So a whole way of life basically is being destroyed for peoples because of the industrialization of the area.
Perhaps that's why, for so many like Chrissy Swan, one day junior member of Grassy Narrows, preserving her indigenous way of life is as important as fighting the impact of mercury poisoning.
You know, I see success when I see my children walking in those same footsteps that I did. When I see us walking the same footsteps that my mother did, that my grandfather did. When we're out there picking the berries and we're eating the fish and we're hunting and we're using our medicines, that's what this is all for, is for that, so that they can have that, so that their children can have that. And this is the way I chose. This is the path that I chose for myself and my kids. For my son, who walked 2,000 kilometers for the water. For those young men and women that walked with him.
Chrissy's son and five of his friends walked all the way from Grassy Narrows to Toronto to educate Canadians about the history of mercury poisoning.
There's six of us who walked to Toronto, Ontario, and we told the story about the mercury to the young people and the people over there. The message was to keep the water clean for not the government to drill into the water. The water is so sacred to us, and we had to keep on fighting for their babies who are coming in the next generation.
Upon their arrival in Toronto, Ninundawa and his friends joined other community members in a symbolic Indigenous fish fry in front of Toronto's Queen's Park.
Being invited to a traditional Aboriginal fish fry is usually a good thing. You want to go through this. It's part of a ceremony of sharing and partaking with your neighbors in a matter of goodwill. It would be a traditional way of sharing food, breaking bread together, showing respect for one another. And unfortunately with this fish fry, they decided that they're going to use the fish that actually comes from Grassy Narrows Lake. And of course, we all know that the water being polluted with the mercury, what that means is that there's going to be a high level mercury content in that fish that you're actually using for the meal. So very interesting that the grandmothers from Grassy Narrows, as I'm assuming that they were the ones who came up with the idea, would want to do this to show politicians in the southern part of Ontario that this is what they have to deal with on a day-to-day basis. It's either go hungry or eat the fish that's available to you, which in this case happens to be contaminated. This, I think, was a real tangible way for people to see, you know, walk a mile in our moccasins. This is what we have to live on every day. Come and sit down and have a meal with us. This is part of what we have to deal with.
On this table, Grassy Narrows invited provincial and federal officials, including the Premier of Ontario. Of course, none made an appearance.
I believe that they haven't showed up because they couldn't care less. We're just a little group of people, and we don't have much to offer them.
Though no one showed up, for the Grassy Narrows community and the supporters of their cause, even symbolic gestures like this can have an impact.
Especially for Indigenous people, you have to fight for generations to even begin to get useless lip service. There's no way if you don't come out, if you don't push and push and push and push and push for years, then you're ignored. And there are so many instances of stuff going on all over where, in fact, you know, people are being ignored. The plight is being ignored. So this is one of the cases that has garnered some news because people are out there, doing their job of defending the land and their community. And this is step one. This is step one to get your situation onto the radar of the dominant order.
Though getting into the radar of the dominant order is not always without a challenge.
You're in violation of the rules and regulations for the property, right?
So because no, we're not, you
can't have an open fire and you can't cook on the property.
It's not open. It's
and as closed. Such, you can't have the fire. And this is an open fire. It's considered an open fire in the city of Toronto. And you can't cook on the property. So if you continue to do it, you're going to be in violation.
Well, our people have been doing this for thousands of years, and the people were here before.
Just so you know, you're subject to arrest under the Trespass to Property Act or other criminal actions, okay?
I don't understand.
Despite all these security measures and the constant negotiations going on between organizers and Toronto's Queen's Park authorities, eventually Kathleen Wayne, Minister of Aboriginal Affairs, made an appearance at the Fish Fry, a turn of events that for many could be a spark of hope for change.
So I think it's great that you're here. I was asked a question in the legislature about why you're here and why we haven't done more, and what I want to say to you is that this is a situation that I really am very concerned about. So it's not nothing to me. It's very, very serious from my perspective. And our officials in the ministry have set up a committee that we had thought we were going to be working with the community to figure out what we have to do next. And so I hope that we can do that now, you know, because
it actually was the first time that the minister had actually spoken to the folks from Grassy Narrows. So in that sense, that was positive. Downside of it, from me just listening to the conversation that she was having, to me, it's more government double talk.
Anything else you want to ask me? Okay. How was the walk? I want to know how it was. Like, did people greet you in the towns as you came through?
We met a lot of people.
Yeah.
And the first day walking, we ended up sleeping outside during a thunderstorm.
Oh my goodness.
It's interesting to me, so giving the length to the interaction, which is something we don't see on the news, she's performing for a news camera. And that's what I think is so compelling. That's where she can't be in control the entire time. You can watch her face shifting back and forth. So, you know, there's a performance that she's trying to make, get over with and move on. And of course, part of that performance is in the telling the people, you know, we're going to talk, which is such a bad joke that it's, of course, not funny at all, because, you know, we've been doing this talking now for hundreds of years. And as long as, you know, colonial relations are not disturbed in any way, of course, what she wants to do is talk, because that involves no action.
You know, one of the things that we have to do, all of us, is we have to make all people in Ontario more aware of the kinds of situations that have been in place, you know? And like I said in the legislature, this never should have happened in the 60s and 70s. And I don't want anybody eating tainted fish, you know? I don't want anybody eating fish with mercury, especially not young people, but I don't want anybody eating.
It's really pernicious. I mean, it would be easier for everyone and better, as far as I'm concerned, if she were to come out and tell the truth and say, look, we don't care about you because you're Indigenous people. We pollute rivers and this kind of stuff all the time. It's what this whole settler state was founded upon, is destruction and exploitation of the land, usually your land, and all of it's your land anyway. We don't really want to admit that. She said at one point, no, this couldn't happen now, you know, that the Grassy Narrows was polluted in the 70s or something. And that's complete nonsense. If you look at the tar sands, massively, massively worse. You know, who knows what kind of horrors are going to be inflicted upon Indigenous and everyone else and on the land around those areas, gigantic ponds full of toxins. It is happening now.
Mm-hmm. Kathleen.
Judy De Silva.
Judy, hi.
Hello.
I'm Kathleen Nguyen. Hi.
Bonjour.
Really nice to meet you.
Yeah. We wanted to invite you to eat with us at the lunchtime once the fish is cooked. Your name's on the table.
Right, I see that. So here's my position on this. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody should be eating tainted fish, you know? I mean, I'll eat a little bit of fish if you want, but I think the message we should send out to all the members of the government and to the federal government and to the community is nobody should be eating tainted fish, you know? We just should say we're not going to feed it to our children, we're not going to eat it anymore.
But the question is, why haven't you done anything until this activism is taking place and people have come down?
We actually have. There was a fish for food program in place. We've never maintained a position that anybody should be eating tainted fish. Now, I understand the community hasn't applied.
Is that how you feel?
Well, I just, there hasn't been an application.
There's a word for that. Minimize us. And that's how I feel when she's talking. And I'm trying to grasp words in myself to give to her so that it shocks her into like a realization to listen to us. But sometimes I get stuck for words.
Yeah, clean up the river. Well, and of the mercury, because we did find that there's still mercury in the sediment.
Well, and this report, yes. So I saw that report, and I just don't know the science well enough to know what can be done at this point. I know there's been an 87% reduction in the mercury, but it needs to be zero, right? That's where we need to get it as low as we can. And I'm not a scientist, and I need the experts to be at the table to talk to us about that.
She knows how to handle us. She knows how to deal with us. That's how I felt, and we were like her little children, being bad, yeah.
My only constraint is that I have cabinet. Are we going to sit at the table soon? Do we know?
The official will probably be ready in about an hour.
Okay, so I have a problem because I have a cabinet meeting right now, so.
You can invite the premier to come in.
You know what? I'm the Minister of the Crown. I'm here as the representative of the government. My problem is that I have a cabinet meeting right now.
What I think this symbolizes is denial on the part of the colonial settler state, and this representative personifies that subjectivity so wonderfully well. She's not there to actually talk. She's there to talk about talking. At the end, some people tried to punch through that Northern European, reserved, beautiful, you know, facade, shiny, nothing can touch me, have I done my soundbite, I'm leaving. Try to get through it a little bit, but you can only get so far, and when you do start to get through it, that's when she really has to leave and really has to go do something more important. So in refusing to really listen, that's the colonial moment, because only those who can afford to refuse to listen can do so. The other folks have to listen.